Magic 102.1 People Station, talking to the legendary Grammy nominated platinum artist, producer extraordinaire, John B in the building.
Matt Hatter, what's good, bro? Thanks for having me, man.
It's good. It's good to see you. You know what's so funny? I saw you on an interview, and I don't remember this, so excuse my ignorance, where it said that you had walked away from the music business for like 10 years. I'm like, seen John B. Like,
I never really walked away.
Okay.
I never walked away. I've always been on the road, smashing shows everywhere in every state. So like, no, I never wanted to get it twisted. It was just 10 years since the last album.
Oh.
So 10 years since the last album is a long time to go without putting something new out. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's about time. That's what got a little bit changed up, you know, as far as
what was the holdup in that time frame of not putting out any music? Did you feel
really the road? Really the road?
Family, because I know you're a family guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But the road, you know, that being the case, because I'm a family man, I got to stay on the road and keep these bills paid, man. You know, I mean, the thing that I think is the biggest misconstrued idea about artists like myself is that in some way, we've received all of our flowers and that was it. It's just like, that's completely misconstrued, because we never got our flowers. You know what I'm saying? In terms of like the business side, I will say there's a lot of disgruntled people from my era because the business was never reciprocated. We might've been successful as artists and the world recognizes us, but in terms of the labels,
you say monetarily, maybe y'all didn't get taken care of like you should have gotten taken care of.
I'm just saying, it's like, and so because of the fact that we still have the people's support, we're able to continue, because I'm independent fully, you know what I mean? So because of y'all's support, I'm able to continue to do what I love to do, which is make music. But at the same time, if I didn't have an audience to serve, like the relationship between me and my fans is a little different, because I actually go to the areas where they buy R&B music and they listen to R&B music. Okay. Every hood in America, every big city, it's nobody that I sort of am discouraged to go see. If they want to see me, I'm going to go to Arkansas. I'm going to go wherever I got to go, man. The little smallest club, it doesn't matter to me, because to just be still doing what I love to do is such a blessing. And then let alone have an audience to serve, like I said, you know what I mean? People that still want to hear the new music and are excited that I'm coming back with something fresh and new, you know?
I think too, man, it seemed like a lot of the cats from the 90s era, everybody still looks like they 23 and a half. The swag is still strong. You know, I'm just being honest. The swag is still strong.
Thank you.
the movement is still there.
I mean, I will thank God for, you know, just the resilience that he's given me, you know, to be able to withstand this game, you know what I mean, of the music industry, you know, because I came in as a music muso dude who was like into drum machines, into synthesizers, into sounds and sound selection. How do I get that sound? How do I make a beat like that? So I kind of wanted to reverse engineer everything that I heard. And after I mastered basically producing music at 16 years old, I was already ready kind of for the industry. So at 18, when I got my deal, it was sort of like expected at that time in my mind. Like I was like, okay, I'm just going to, instead of producing everybody else and using that as my tool, I'm going to produce myself and use myself as a tool and tell myself it's okay to be this guy and give myself the green light. You know what I mean? Instead of looking for somebody else to give me the green light, it was like, I think I'm gonna give myself this chance. You know what I mean? To be a John B, you know what I mean? Be myself.
Mr. B, I kind of put you in this weird category where it seems like we have embraced you. And I don't know if we embraced you so hard that the other audience never got a chance to get some John B. I kind of put you in this category like Tina Marie.
Ooh.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Tina Marie was so.
But see, that's the ultimate compliment.
I'm gonna go ahead and use this word. Tina Marie was so black.
Yeah.
Like there was no way she could cross over. I feel like you kind of got embraced so urban wise. It was And I know you've made, you said that the record companies made attempts to like, hey, John, we want you to cross over, but.
Right. All the time.
But.
And Babyface as well. You know, you really wanted me to cross over. You know?
Right. So how does that feel? Or were you ever like, damn, man, I really want to cross over? Or, you know, you were just happy in the lane that you had created for yourself. And if that's, if so be it, so to speak.
I really was excited to be a part of R&B music and just to do that in such a full-hearted, completely, you know, internalizing what I took from the music and allowing that to be enough to radiate from outside myself, you know what I mean, through my music that I made, and allow that to be the communicating factor for myself, you know, instead of trying to keep up with the Joneses and to do this or to do that. I really felt like the things that I'm inspired by, hip hop music, jazz music, R&B, classic soul, you know, rock and roll, like new wave music, house music, all of letting all those influences just kind of happen for me and continue to just be my inspiring factor. Gospel music. I mean, all of it, you know, it was so inspiring to me that I felt like it was, it's just a part of me anyway.
Right.
And God made me this way so that I feel like I could be an example too, because I feel like, yeah, I was really one of the first of my kind, because now I see a lot of me around, you know. And that, you know what I mean? And like, so back in the day, I didn't see really anybody like me. I felt like the odd man out.
Now it's easy. Now, I don't want to say it's easy, but there's been people who laid the groundwork. So yeah. It is more palatable.
Absolutely.
Those artists. So I will salute you on that. Now, the other thing is, and I thought it was funny because I watched the Tank interview that you did, and you mentioned
one of these
huge writers that wrote hit songs for the Celine Dion's and the Whitney Houston, she had said that you were so black and you were so
Diane Warren.
And I wasn't gonna put her name out there again, but when you said that, I'm like, when you said it, I'm like, I felt some type of way. And then when you said who it was, I'm like, well, you wrote a whole bunch of hit songs for people who are really black. So to say that to you.
Diane Warren is kind of, that's kind of like the, isn't it the kind of like.
I don't know. It's a strange.
It's like, wait, why don't you have the same, like, affinity for the same music and the same soul and everything. So I don't think that she was kind of out of pocket. I think that it's just honestly like people, less is more, and like this new generation, they say less. I kind of like in this case, like, you know what I mean, like I just want to be like, hey,
there's a side of
say it. Less. It's all good.
I think she was just trying to say you're just not that you're what you do is so black to me, and I guess. And that's the biggest compliment to me, bro.
That's the biggest compliment to me is like to be able to blend in with the people that I grew up being so influenced by and sort of, you know, like modeled myself after, in a sense of everything from the music that I was listening to the way that I was dressing, to the way that I was speaking, to the church that I was going to every model of my life is sort of like it rolls with the culture of this R&B hip hop music and also every other style of music. But I will say primarily on the forefront of what I love is soul music, and anything that has soul to it or rhythm or melody primarily is what I gravitate towards. I really don't put music into categories and boxes too much to do that. Is like really kind of limiting myself in terms of what I, because I just, it's just noise, it's just sound coming out the speaker at the end of the day. So yeah, we put all these categories together because it makes us feel some type of way, but I mean honestly it's just music at the end of the day, and the music that you love and that you want to make, you should make it, you know, make it full-heartedly and don't ask nobody's permission to do so either, man, you know, because then it's like, I think then it's an external thing. Music isn't an external thing. Even though you hear it coming out the speakers, when you're like me, it's an internal thing. It comes from inside out. So you can't tell me that God, you know, wasn't trying to make a point when he blessed me with the voice and he blessed me with the gift to be able to write and to be able to make these beats and to be able to perform the way that I do. And, you know, just to be able to say, hey, a man's a man. And if he wants to do this, he can do this. If he wants to do that, he can do that. But I just want to be a man in this world making good music.
Yes, sir.
Rather than being a certain type of man making a music. Because I really feel like when it all comes down to it, we're all going to realize in the end it was only one man.
Mm, okay.
You know what I mean?
I can dig it.
It was only one man. So, yeah, we're going to kind of be feeling some, wow, I gave all that thought process towards being different than someone else when really all this time I've been the same. Mm. And it's just about being one heart, one love, you know?
Yes, sir. Do you ever feel like, because you had this affinity for hip hop, although when we think John B, there's no doubt that this guy's is R&B, but there's this undercurrent of hip hop that lays with you too.
Oh yeah.
Do you ever feel like that might have turned the corner for your career with the labels?
Yes.
Affinity for hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, there was battles when you first decided, hey, I want to do this record with Pac. That's crazy. Someone to love and all these hardcore guys. And then he says, I want to do a song with Tupac. Like, what? The most dangerous rapper on these streets? No, John, we can't do this.
Yeah. No, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a trip to be a trailblazer in that sense of, being fearless with my music. And when it comes to the music, it's like I'm making it from 0 to 100, like that fast. It goes from making the beat myself to playing the chords on top. So when I'm thinking I want to collaborate with somebody, I'm not thinking, oh, it has to be an R&B artist or it has to be this with a singer, this and that. I'm thinking, no, I want an MC to rap on. I'm a fan of hip hop music, and let alone Tupac Shakur. I've been listening to him since I was in high school, in freshman year of high school, rocking I Get Around on the back of the B side of the Digital Underground's Humpty Dance cassette. You know what I mean? So the first time hearing his voice, I was a fan from the beginning. So let alone being able to link up with him and all that, of course, was incredible. But yeah, it's just like the whole process of being fearless about collaboration, being fearless about genre, whatever it is that you want to do, whatever style it is that you feel like you want to convey. I'm a real artist. I'm not somebody who's asking permission to be a certain way. Will it be cool if I do this, or will it be cooler if I do that? Oh my gosh. It's so easy to see those type of artists, especially when they're coming out like left and right. And you kind of look at them like looking like the deer in headlights in the video. It's like, you're not even sure. So why are you even out right now? You know what I mean? But real talk, but I'm not hating. I'm just saying, like, when you look in the camera and like you're looking at the actual person that you're speaking to, and I believe you when I'm looking at you, like look at me in the camera, or rather myself, that's when I think that you're ready to be an artist. And I think that's when you're ready to convey the message. And evidently I've connected with people after all these years with not only my voice, but, being myself, just looking into the camera and conveying the message. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that itself is why guys like, Nas, Jay-Z, Drake.
Paul Wall, we in Texas, baby.
Paul Wall. Yeah. Oh, hey, big up. You know what I mean? Of course, That's why we all should collaborate like we have, and me being a fan of the music like I am, it's sort of like my sole interest as a musician, is to collaborate. It's like, that's when the real game is on. That's when you go from being in the scrimmage, getting ready to it, to actually being in the game with the star players that you've always wanted to play with. And, that's it. We all live for that. You want to deal with the other pros and the guys that grew up just like bumping their music in your ride when you rolled around. I mean, when I think of Nas, I think of Street Dreams Are Made of These. I mean, so many records that are just go back to my early days in 94, 95, Illmatic. And like, I mean, when I think of Gangstar, Guru from Gangstar, getting to collaborate with him in 96, I believe, 97, I believe. on the Cool Relax remix. That was a dream come true. And, you know, it's actually dope because I actually just collaborated with Premier for the first time of Gangstar, of course.
Okay.
And I'm a huge, huge Premier fan. So we just did it. We cooked up a masterpiece.
Is this something that's going to come out or?
It's going to come out, man. I believe it's going to come out on his next record.
Oh, it's on
his next album. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would love to put it on my album, but I didn't want to overstep my boundaries in that right. It's a Premier beat. I'm just honored to be on the joint. I went over to his studio and I started playing the keyboard. My man Brady Watt. I got to big up Brady Watt because Brady Watt produced the track for my first single, "Waiting on You," which is featuring Tank, which just came out. Been out now some time now. It's been bubbling a little bit. But anyway, the whole jump off with Premier was, you know, us being in the studio together and me kind of playing the keyboards with Brady Watt, just jamming. And then Premier walked in the room and was like, "What's that?" And I was just like, "This is just us going." He says, "Record." So we recorded it and it was kind of like this little riff. And then he ended up sampling the riff, putting the Premier drums on top, the scratching on top. And I mean, even like did his vocals and all that. Just as a fan, this is an absolute full circle moment for me. Like, you know, I always wanted to work with Premier. So big up Primo, Premier, 2024. I don't know if it's coming or 25, but get ready for a John B. Primo collaboration for sure. For sure. Brady Watt.
I know everyone asked you about Pac. Your career is very connected because obviously this is the last, many folks' knowledge, the last time that Pac did something with somebody, because if I'm not mistaken, a couple of weeks later after he records your record, he passes away.
Yeah.
What was that whole, and I know you get asked this repeatedly, but for those that may not have heard this story, what was that whole process like of working with Pop? And to me at this time, it's a left field song for John B, because somebody said, "Hey man, John B got a new one with Tupac."
Right. At the time, it was a definite shock for everyone.
Years, you know, you hear that, you like, John B, someone to love John B.
Right.
Let me see what this sounds like. Do you hear
it? Yeah,
like,
right.
They went home.
You know what was so dope is when I finally came to the studio to work with Pac, my CD, Bonafide, my first album, with me in the white shirt with my hands up like this, you know. Yeah. It was like, "Welcome to the world, y'all." I had that picture, right? But he had it right there on his front seat in his car. And I was completely like, I walked by and I was like, "Oh, that's dope. That's so dope right there." Yeah. Just the fact that it looks like he was just listening to my music. And I thought, God, he's kind of here a little early, isn't he? Because I showed up like an hour before to get equipment set up and, you know, I'm producing a track. So I'm thinking, let me get all my stuff midied up and everything, you know, hooked up to the board and start recording a little beat or something. But he was there already. So the whole collaboration was sort of like meeting him, and you know, he was real cool right away. We started off real it was really nobody in the studio but just the engineer, me and Tupac. So we had a real like a moment to kind of build, and none of the equipment was set up. So before I got it set up, I said, "Do you have anything that you might want to play me that you already think is dope that we might be able to rock over?" Just because, I mean, I'd love to see how you hear like us doing something. He's like, "Matter of fact, let me play you something right now." He put in that and played the track to "Are You Still Down," which I had no idea at the time was something else that he had been working on. Like the track itself, he had like a rough version of a song that he did, but he didn't play me that version. He just played me the track. So I had never heard that before, and the first thing I thought was, "Oh man, this sounds like some Marvin Gaye midnight love type shit, like something that Marvin Gaye would do right today, you know what I mean?" And like some sexual healing, like, but it had like a Sade thing to it. The track spoke to me, man. And so I just said, you know, the track had to speak to me in a certain way for me to waive my whole production opportunity to produce Tupac like that, to make a beat for Tupac, that track had to be smacking. Man, listen, that was an amazing track, to say the least. Johnny J, rest in peace, you know what I mean? Johnny J, the producer of the track, wasn't there that day. Now, Johnny J had produced, like, How Do You Want It? He produced big hits for Pac. So, you know, when he said that Johnny, I said, who did the beat? And he's like, Johnny J. I was just like, yeah, man, let's rock with this right here, you know? And we recorded it down from that to the 2-inch. And we started to write. And it was really cool because the first thing we came up with was the hook, which was what you want to write about, man. You know, that in between, you know, that in between writing, you know, the words down, it's just like, what do you want to write about? And I was like, man, I want to holler back to like the ex, you know what I mean? And just be like, what's good? You know? And he was like, you mean, are you still down? And I was like, yeah, are you still down? You know, that's perfect. And then I started riffing some melodies. Somewhere along the lines, the na, 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 got done like that. You know, that melody. Na, 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 na. That was ringing in the room. And I think Pac really internalized that melody and kind of like he put the swag on it. He put the words, girl, it's all right, baby, was the first thing that we came up with. Mm. And then we just kind of going back and forth, and because it's there in your eyes, yeah. And then he's like, I can see that you want me by the way that you smile. Are you still down for me? You know what I mean? And it was a back and forth.
Back and forth with that?
It's a back and forth kind of thing, you know, writing wise. It was very, very much like with the pencil, the paper still, you know what I mean? We were writing stuff down, like, and the handwriting, you know what I mean? You scribble a word, erase it or whatever, and replay all that, you know? And so but it was very, very, with Pac, it wasn't a lot of erasing. It wasn't a lot of extra thinking. It was go. So it was like, you get a riff and just go with the riff and start singing it. Then the riff turns into words, then a little bit of mumble words. Then the mumble words turn to actual words. And then, you know, so, but within 3 hours, we had a finished record. Mm-hmm. Recorded and everything, like, and I was on the vocal box, the little vocoder drum, like just, you know, singing through the vocoder on top to try to make it sound like some Roger Troutman type in the background, you know, and just having fun, man. And I remember every person that walked into the room, into the session, it would be like, he would check them at the door, like, you know who, you know what session you, this ain't my session. That's John B up in there. You know what I mean? And he makes sure they came with that reverence and that sense of like, all right, this is dope, or, you know, or beat it. You know what I mean? Cause he was like, nah, I ain't trying to have no other energies around here. Like, yeah, being 40 people up in that room that night, man. I'm trying to find somebody with a video from that night still to this day.
Wow, that'd probably be classic. Do you have the handwriting of the lyrics at all?
I wish I did, man. Wow. You know, it's just funny. That's why I want to tell the youth of today, man, when you're going through moments in your life, you have so many more tools to archive those moments. So don't be afraid to archive these moments and to save them, because you guys have the extra tools. If I would have had a cell phone like that back then that could record things and have a camera on it, imagine how easy it would have been.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, they probably existed, but I just didn't have that at the time. This is 96. So you know what I mean? We was going with the two ways and the, you know, the Motorola flip phones and all those, man, you know?
That's both of us, man. Now, you also said that you had Suge wouldn't clear this record at first.
And that was an issue. We thought it was going to be an issue because we couldn't use the right to his name in terms of like Tupac. We had to put a question mark on the actual single featuring question mark, and everybody knew what question mark meant.
That. I think I have that CD. I forgot about that.
You know what the trip was, is that I also felt some type of way about releasing the record after his passing, because it was so shortly after his passing that, you know, it just didn't feel right in my spirit to to make that, to just assume that his family and that everyone would want to that to be the last thing that people heard or whatever, you know, or the first thing that people heard after his passing. I had no idea of knowing. So I felt very, very self-conscious about releasing the record. As honored as I was, the record got leaked. Actually in Atlanta, it got leaked at a radio station in Atlanta. I don't know what station it was, but somebody had a copy of that joint and they played it. And then it just, the copy just kind of got sent around, and it wasn't even a mixed version of the song. It was just like a rough version that somebody had, man. And it kind of forced the label into a situation where they were like, well, this is kind of growing and getting hot. So, you know, we think we might want to release this as a single. I was like, wow, this is like almost a year later. And like, I was like really thrown off, to be quite honest with you, because I was just kind of like, this is really, you know, this is kind of personal for me at this point. It's, I knew the guy. So it was more than just selling a single. It was like, this guy's not around to vouch for this, man. So we can't even do a video for the song. Like, why, you know? So it just, what happened was we put They Don't Know out.
Great.
And I put Are You Still Down on the same single. So that when you bought They Don't Know, you got Are You Still Down. Mm. And that was my way of kind of honoring Pac, but not stepping on his legacy in the sense of like trying to promote myself through his demise. You know what I mean? In that sense. Yeah. Yeah. So people had to find it. And if you supported me on They Don't Know, then you were happily surprised on that double A side that we gave you with that They Don't Know and Are You Still Down. So.
And you spoke to his mom about that too. And your mom was like, yo, move forward with this, bro.
Yeah. It's Afeni Shakur invited me to sing at his memorial, his first year memorial. And, that was a very emotional performance and beautiful night, with his family and, getting to actually hear from her, you know, from her mouth that, you know, he loved the song and that he wanted her to hear the song, and he never really played too many of his tracks for her, you know, and that was a song that he felt like, nah, this is gonna kind of be my hit, my new hit, you know. And so yeah, she felt that that was sort of her part was to vouch for the song, to vouch for the release and the you know, the ability to get the courtesy to be able to put that out. So yeah, if it wasn't for Afeni Shakur, it wouldn't have never probably even come out. It probably would have been on like one of his compilation CDs or something, you know, that came out soon after that, which actually was called Are You Still Down? The first release album that she put in, you know, in his memory was Are You Still Down? Because he had so many unfinished, unreleased records. Mm-hmm. Were so many different people that wanted to collaborate with him, but they sort of collaborated with his voice after the fact of him already being, you know, making his transition, man. So, you know, I feel definitely honored that I was able to work with the man while he was, you know, had his feet on the, you know, on the earth. And, you know, and I've just, it sort of never gets old talking about it, but I also feel like, I want people to know, like, this really speaks volumes to, like, everything I'm talking about collaboration and what it is, why it means so much to me. You know, I think Tupac defined that for me in terms of what that means to me. And so if I can't work with you in the studio, per se, it's dope to be able to work with people's voices and everything. That's a surreal element, but it's nothing like getting in the studio and, like, working out some lyrics and, you know, writing a song together, essentially, you know.
I dig it. You've been married, what, 18 years now? Is that right?
17, actually. 17. But, yeah, we're going 17. On 18.
Now, here's the thing. What advice can you give people? Because, look, 17 years, there's going to be some times where y'all get mad at each other.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all won't speak to each other. You mean
communication is everything. I mean, we don't do that whole silent treatment for very long. Neither one of us can stand that. because you know, and not to be all like letting y'all like into too personal my business, but you know, in terms of like letting you know, we're not afraid to be grown-ups together, and but we're real grown-ups. We're not kids anymore. We're not 25 and fighting like we're 25, you know. We have responsibilities, we have children, so it's more than just our heads that we're thinking about. We're thinking about our kids and like how it's going to affect them, like whatever it is that we're doing. So it's really, it's a matter of like kind of being accountable in that sense on both of our parts all the time. And it's a hard thing to balance being a rock star on the weekend and coming home and just being dad driving, you know, your kid to school or picking them up from school. And it's actually not a hard balance. I think it's more for the mental to be able to go back and forth and just to know, okay, this is my regular, you know, this might not be regular for anybody else, but this is what my regular is, you know? And I'm a regular guy, man. I love being with my family. I love chilling with my wife, you know, like when we don't really have like time like that to be able to really have date night or do like vacations. But what we do have is the ability to work together. And so if I do have a show in London, it's like, hey, I'm bringing the family with me. And then we make that a European kind of little tour trip. You know what I mean? And so we have time to travel. Or if I'm doing a show in Hawaii, you're coming with me. You know what I mean? And we have to make that like a workcation, you know? But yeah, they're always with me. If I'm in New York or if I'm, you know, going to stay some time doing press somewhere, for the single, promoting at radio and doing shows around town, they'll come with me and stay in the hotel, and we'll make that like a nice, you know, way to kind of just have family bonding time, you know, just order room service and watch movies or whatever, you know, go buy slime for my 10-year-old in at the slime store, you know, just regular stuff, man. You know what I mean? So,
man, look, you look like one of the happiest people in the world. No, you for real, because sometimes you can see it in an artist's face that maybe there's some trepidation, that life is on their shoulders. Oh. I can tell that, you know, I love my family. I love my wife being around. I love my space that I'm in. I got my platinum and goals. I've established myself. I think you look, when I'm talking to you, you look like you're in a very, not your home, but you look like you're in comfortable, peaceful place. How did you get there? Because the music industry sometimes don't allow for that type of peace.
I think the peace that you bring with you is the peace that you'll end up with. And the peace that I started out with is the peace that I preserved. So like I never gave my peace up. You know what I mean? Like no money, no status, no opportunity was bigger than me in my internal soul and what's going on inside me. You know what I mean? Like same guy that wrote those songs, I Do What You Say Boo, you know, don't listen to what people say, they don't know about you and me. Those are themes that come from a very deep place inside myself. And it's not just a love song. That's the theme to my life, man. You know what I mean? That's what I had to live my life to. I was just trying to tell myself something, a good word, you know, and that when you even come up with those words, don't listen to what people say. So it's like the same soul that wrote those records is the same soul that's talking to you right now. And it's writing the song Waiting on You, that's talking about the waiting that goes on in a relationship, how you can go 17 years and feel like the person's been with you all this time, but in some way you're still waiting for something. What is that that you're waiting for? What is that? What are we waiting on? We're not, you know, I guess I'm waiting on you. And whenever you show up, it's always on time for me, you know, because we've been together now. It's like I learned to count on you to show up. It's not that I hope you show up. It's when you do, I'm happy, you know? So, and I think that really is just speaking more or less specifically about that intimate time, you know, the time you get to be together. And in my work, it's, you know, it's, we got a lot of pressure on the table. There's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of, you know, pacing back and forth, you know, whether it be getting ready to do a show or standing in line at the airport, you know, it is what it is. It's part of the gig, man.
Well, we'll get a chance to see you in Houston Mother's Day weekend. The ladies R&B kickback. You'll be here with us. Faith 702 Genuine Pleasure P. It's going to be great to see you on stage. I think if they've lived in Houston, if they have not seen a John B. show, can you tell them why they need to come out here and be a part of this kickback during this Mother's Day? It's going to be the Mother's Day weekend too, by the way. So,
well, for the mothers, of course, we got to do something special, you know, and treat them to some chivalry and some just good energy that day, right?
Right.
A good meal, a good concert, a good show. That's not bad, you know. But let alone, I'm going to sing my heart out to you. You know, that's what I do. I come to sing my heart out every time for my family, my extended family. And, you know, it's just a pleasure to do what I love to do regardless. I'm going to stand up there with my friends and my family. I've known all of those people for many years now. And it's just a beautiful thing to celebrate all of our careers together in the same building.
Yes.
And a beautiful thing to celebrate the relationship that we still have with you guys, the listeners and the fans, man. So we're just all honored to still be doing what we love. And yeah, we're going to celebrate all the hits, all the songs you know and love, and even my new single, Waiting on You, yes, featuring Tank, which you have, if you haven't heard it, you got to check it out, man. We got a video for that. This new single is called Natural Drug, and it's going to be dropping very soon, a couple weeks. We finished the video for that, which is featuring the lovely Cynthia Bailey.
Okay.
In the video as my muso for the video. She's a beautiful, beautiful lady, as you know. And it's just a wonderful thing to work with her. And the song's a dope record. Not another ballad. I'm kind of on my ballad vibes right now. So hoping everybody feels that. And the new album will be following very, very shortly. June, it looks like June 7th is what our predicted date for release is.
You got a name for the album?
It's called Waiting on You.
Oh, so the name of the single is the name of
the album? The name of the single is the name of the album.
Yes, sir.
I felt it's appropriate, you know? It's kind of like my way of looking at this whole project and saying, okay, it's time. Is it time? All right. It's 10 years. All right. We're waiting on you now. No more waiting on you. It really should be like no more waiting on you, but it's waiting on you. Sometimes you got to wait. Sometimes you got to be patient. You know, 10 years is taking to be this guy, you know? So I feel like it's right. I kind of come into my own, into a new era of my life with this one. You know, I'm almost 50. I'll be 50 next year. So
boys making, you know, 50 look good, man.
Hey, cheers, brother. Respect, man. They say black don't crack, and they say some beige don't age, babe. I'm hoping to be one of them guys. You know what I mean?
I feel you. I got you. Man, it's a pleasure to talk to you, John B. You consistently
be
the same. You have a wonderful career. I love the family vibe that you put off, man, and that being important to you. And I appreciate you even taking the time to sit at your crib and allow us in your crib and to talk to me on Magic 102.1, man. So thank you so much, man. We can't wait to see you, bro.
Can't wait to see y'all, man. Mad Hatter, man. It was dope talking to you, brother. Thank you for your questions, man. Thanks for your support, my man. Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you, man.
All right, everybody out there watching, love.
Take care, Mr. B.
All right, yo. Peace. Yeah.